Today's podcast is sponsored by DraftKings.com. Football's your passion. You know the players and the teams, their strengths and weaknesses. You can put that knowledge to the test this weekend and play for your shot at the $1 million top prize at DraftKings.com. It's part of the $5 million in total prizes that they're doling out for the Week 1 contest, because DraftKings.com is the destination for one-week fantasy football. One-week fantasy means no season-long commitments. Pick the players you want. Play whenever you want with those players. Pick the contest, draft your players, and follow your team live. Renew old rivalries by challenging friends and family in a private league to prove you're the superior GM, or join an existing league and go head-to-head with friends, co-workers, and fantasy players from all across the country. So hurry to DraftKings.com now. Choose your players, and you can seriously cash in week one. Use promo code ROB. Play for free with your first deposit. That's promo code ROB to play for free for your share of $5 million in total prizes in the week one contest, only at DraftKings.com. That's DraftKings.com. Eligibility restrictions may apply. See website for details. Hey, everybody, what's going on? Rob Cesternino back here with another one of the landmarks on the way to Survivor Season 33, one of the tentpole podcasts that we do, a staple even at this point, as Angie Kontz is here with us once again to talk about the Survivor character types for Season 33, the Millennials and the Gen Xers. Angie!
Woohoo! I'm a staple. I've made it.
Yes, yes.
Very exciting.
That was easy. Yeah. So there we're back, Angie, ready to talk about the your beloved Gen Xers taking on the Millennials.
I do love the Gen Xers, and I am really happy to be back doing this for another season. Can I say that as hard as it is to kind of put yourself out there doing a predictive system like this, I love doing this podcast, and I really like the listeners of RHAP. You've built such a wonderful community out here, and you should be very proud of yourself.
Look, there's a lot of people that love this. There's a lot of people that have issues with anything that we do. But look, we're counting down the days to a new season. And there's a lot of different ways we can get into previewing this. And this is another one of the fun things that we do. So take it easy,
it is a
everybody.
Gotta relax,
yeah,
bro.
Yeah. Take it with a grain of salt. And so we're going to go through everything. So Angie, set this up, because we always have new listeners to the podcast that this may be their first time listening to the Character Types show. So first off, give us a little bit of background on you and this system that you've created.
Okay, no problem. I come from a marketing background, so that does a lot of work with demographics and understanding how different people behave in certain circumstances to different kinds of sales offers and what have you. So what the system has essentially done is, while doing a rewatch of all the Survivor seasons, I started to notice patterns in the types of people that were cast on the show. And then I started to wonder, is it possible that you could create a category of type of player? And is that consistent from season to season? And if that were in fact true, if there was enough consistency in the types of people that casting chose, could you then create a model that predicts how well a player is going to do in the preseason? So that's what we're trying to do here. And it's so accurate. It seems to be consistently around 50% accurate, yeah. Which, so it doesn't have the wild swings of other, like, just random guesses or even educated guesses from super fans. So, I mean, there's some things that it's consistent with in terms of, it's pretty good at deciding, figuring out how people are going to play the game. It's better at that than it is at predicting an absolute concrete order, but it's not too bad at the order.
And I think it's really interesting, with your marketing background, that the idea of the Millennials and the Gen Xers, like as we discussed with Jamie Goodfriend on the podcast about, a week and a half ago, is that I think that these narratives are sort of coming from the world of marketing to begin with. I don't think that people necessarily self-identify of that, oh, me and the other millennials out there. I sort of like that. I think people who are probably trying to sell stuff are the people that are coming up with these ideas, like some going back to like the Don Drapers of the world. How do we market to this generation? How do we market to this generation? So we come up with sort of these broad spectrums that we have defined, the Gen Xers, the Millennials. And then it's almost like we're going to really then drill down into, okay, this is this type of person that is a Heisenberg, and this is this type of person. Doesn't necessarily mean that every single person is going to be exactly the same, but we can sort of assign some traits to the type of person that's in that spot.
Exactly. What I do is I go through their bios and their videos and read articles on them. And it's like I have a little checklist. And if you get more checks in the boxes under one character type than another, that's what you are. I'm not trying to limit anybody. I'm not trying to say that they couldn't, that that's all that they're ever going to do is the best that character type has ever done. They're standouts almost every season. So it really is just a way of trying to manage the unknowable.
Not every millennial is created equal, and not every I can see your periscope is created equal.
Exactly.
Okay. All right, so let's just go back and take a look at the last season that we did, which was also all new people back in Survivor Co Wrong. You had a lot of really strong opinions on that, and I feel like that you were doing okay for a while, but how did it all work out for Co Wrong?
I mean, I'm not going to lie. Last season, my system really sucked.
I remember you were high on Darnell.
I was.
Yeah.
I was high on Darnell. So really, I mean, I don't want to make excuses for myself, but the three medevacs really did screw me over.
The medevacs will really throw the curveball at the character type system.
Well, two of them were very strategic, strategically critical points in the game, and it makes it almost a throwaway season in terms of predictive systems. And I would imagine that's true of anybody who has any sort of predictive system. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So it was a season where I suffered the worst accuracy rate since I developed the. Yeah.
And who was the winner pick that you had? Was it Kyle Jason?
It was.
Yeah.
It was. Yeah. So part of the problem too is I don't know if you remember, but last season I tried updating the system to remove the returnees.
Wait, hold on. I just want to talk through the cut. So you feel like that if Neil would have gone to tribal council that night, that would have been one of the cobblestones that would have facilitated the Kyle Jason victory?
Potentially. I think the Caleb, like Neil, I didn't think it was that big of a deal, although idols always change things significantly.
Yeah.
I think the Caleb medevac really did change the entire tone of the game, because it really was a scooping type of scenario where one side.
You don't want to ever have a scooping type situation.
You don't. You want to stay away from the scooping.
Yeah. If you can help it.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. But mostly, I mean, it's just because, you know, Caleb was supposed to go top five, mm-hmm. and he
top
didn't because he passed out, you know? So that's obviously going to change the prediction significantly.
All right.
You know?
So then what was it that you learned from Co Wrong to help the system from going wrong again?
Grown. I like keeping the full field of players for the new player seasons. I'm not going to remove the returnees from it again for two reasons. One, it didn't significantly change the outcome enough to make it worth the hassle.
Hold on, could you explain what you mean by the removing the returnees?
Well, what we did for second chances is we got a far more accurate prediction of how the returnees were going to do by looking at only returnee seasons. For example, there are certain character types, the Siren in particular, that does extremely well in returnee seasons, but only so-so in regular new player seasons. So removing the returnees and looking at them in isolation was very beneficial for getting a read on how the second chances players were going to do. So for Co Wrong, I thought, well, let's keep them removed and now just look at the field of brand new players and then judge a new season just based on that. And while some people had shifted around a little bit in the prediction, overall, it didn't make that big of a difference. And it even seemed a little bit more accurate looking at all of them put together. Plus, all the fans in the fan versus favorite seasons are completely ignored if you look at them in isolation, because they're neither a returnee nor a new player season.
Okay, so your system is including every season, all 32 seasons, and all the players that have played the game up until this point.
Yep. That's how I like it.
Yeah. You know, maybe one of the reasons why the system was off in season 31 was because that, or in season 32 was because season 31 had already been played. Did we include that in the formula?
We did.
Yeah. See, and then this happened before that season played out. So maybe
it shouldn't matter, but yeah, I know
Andy,
what you're
I'm giving
saying.
You an
it's
out.
Like, it's like, I know it's like the it's like a time travel paradox. I just can't even wrap my head around it.
All right. So that's all new players and the system is going to give it another whirl here
I think
for the millennials
so.
And the Gen Xs.
I think so. I mean, there were about five players that were pretty much on the money with the system, and about six players that were real surprises to me. And I don't know how much time you want to spend on a season that's done. Mm-hmm. But
if there's anything else that you feel like might be interesting to share, otherwise, I'm happy to adjust my focus to season 33.
I'm happy with that as well.
Good. Now, is there anything that you need to do differently in terms of getting ready for a season with a theme where, okay, everybody in this tribe is going to be like-minded or of a certain, you know, whether it's age or sex? I know you and I had talked previously about, like, when you have seasons of men versus women, anything that you need to do in putting this together where, oh, this certain character type won't do as well because they'll be with all people that are of the same age?
I don't look at it in terms of like who the tribe mix is and how that's going to potentially affect them. I mean, I could potentially in the future perhaps do an analysis like that. Mostly when it's an age split tribe like in Nicaragua, what I have to do is not be too concerned with how old the player is. Mm. Because, you know, and it's a big cast too. Like, we haven't had 20 brand new players since Nicaragua, I think.
Yeah.
And so that's like a lot of people to fit in a, you know, in a fairly small number of spots. And in my mind too, it's like since they wanted to be millennial versus Gen X, that means they're aiming for a certain window of 10, like, so 10 people have to be in this age window and the other 10 have to be in this other age window, which means some of the age brackets are going to be a little bit squishy.
How do you feel overall about the idea of a millennials versus Gen X theme? Are you anti the idea of it, or do you think that there's some merit?
I don't know. I'm always so optimistic when we go into new seasons. I don't know what's wrong with me. I was like, no, it's going to be great. And then it isn't. And then I feel stupid for thinking it was going to be good.
Yeah.
I like Gen Xers. You know, that's complete bias on my part because I am one. But I don't know. I like the idea of the millennials all being as a group and seeing how they're going to interact together. Yeah. Like, it's like, I think a lot of the time, like, the old people get targeted early because they're on tribes with young people. So in a way, it's a nice way to kind of shield some of the stronger older players. And hopefully they're not going to lose all the challenges and just relentlessly have to go to tribal council.
I like the theme. I hate the name. I think that the name probably could have used like another 30 minutes in the meeting to sort of nail down the branding. It's sort of like one of these like terrible merge tribe names that we have where we sort of just combine the two names of what the things are. I guess it's better that we didn't call it like Millennialation X or something like that, but it's just not a great name. Does not roll off the tongue.
It doesn't, but I think they just want to be very, very clear as to what it's about and maybe pull in some viewers that wouldn't otherwise be watching. Yeah. I don't know.
That's fair. That's fair in terms of the SEO of the name.
Or just you see a commercial of it. Well, normally I don't watch Survivor because I think it's stupid, but if it's millennials versus Gen X, mm-hmm. Who knows?
I just don't know why we didn't get some sort of, and we're really way off the beaten path here, but like some sort of like Micronesia. Okay, oh, this is fans versus favorites and call it like some other name for Fiji.
I don't think people remember the ones that are about places, though. Mm. Like I remember my first time watching all the Survivors and seeing the trivia contest that Eric Reichenbach wins in Micronesia, where he's able to like name the seasons by place rather than, you know, I always knew it by the players. I'd be like, oh, that's Sandra's season. That's Richard's season. That, you know, like when I was still a casual is what I'm saying. I had no understanding of what the names of the actual seasons were.
Okay. All right.
So I think the marketing people might be a little hesitant to do that.
All right. Well, let's go ahead and start to get into the millennials and the Gen Xers. So were there any big surprises for you when you applied your formula to this season?
Yes. Yes, there were essentially three controversial moves that I'm going to make in my system this year.
Okay.
It was very, very tricky. There were a number of people that I just, it's a puzzle. Every year it's a puzzle. And if people have tried to put...
And do puzzles lay down for you like lovers?
I wish they did, Rob. They really don't. They really don't. I need more of that in my system, I think. Because sometimes listeners will send me like, this is who I think is which casting type. Please forgive me if I haven't replied, because I try not to look at it till after I've definitively decided myself, this is it, this is the final, because then I get influenced and then I get insecure about my picks. And so I will reply to you after.
Okay.
It was very, very tricky. it was very, very tricky for a number of these, but it is every year. But 2020 players was really was extra challenging.
It's a lot. It's a lot.
Yeah.
All right. Well, look, at least you didn't have to do this for Australian Survivor, 24 people.
Yeah. People keep asking me, what's Phoebe? I'm like, I don't know. It's Australia.
You have no idea.
Well, I haven't looked at it yet. I doubt, like, culturally, I don't know if you've noticed this. Culturally, they seem so different. Like the Australian survivors, that would be very much what a Canadian survivor would be like.
Mm-hmm.
Like in terms of their personalities and how they.
So you've been watching.
I have. I'm a little bit behind because there's so many of them. Like, I feel like I finally catch up and, oh, there's three more.
It's a commitment.
So, yeah, I think I'm only five episodes in.
Okay.
And there's probably like 25 by now already.
All right. Yeah. So, all right, let's start to get into how you do the reveal of this. So you are going to give us from the person that your system predicts will do the worst up until the person who is going to be in first place. Is that correct?
That's right.
Okay.
That's right. So I'm going to start at the first boot and work my way up. How I do the boot order is by using the placement ranking. So the system works in two ways. You get two results at the end of looking at all the data. One, you gauge the average placement of all the character types, all the instances of plays that each character type has had. So you get an average placement. So this person usually comes in sixth, for example. Mm-hmm. And then you also get a win rate. So out of all the times they've played, how many times has this character type won? So the win rate is very different than the placement rate.
Mm-hmm.
So there is some overlap because obviously people that are most likely to win are also most likely to finish in the top five. But the people that are most likely to win are not always the person that are ranked to come in first in the order, if that makes any sense. So, for example, I think I had Carolyn finishing first in Worlds Apart.
Yeah, baby.
But I just knew she was going to make it to Final Tribal. I didn't necessarily think she was going to win.
And then the order in which you're going to reveal these, it's not always the same order every season. Like when I podcast with AJ Mass, when we get down to 13 and we talk about the archetypes that he's created, those archetypes are always the same in terms of that he says, okay, the marriage of convenience and is always going to be in this spot and Captain Loophole's always going to be in this spot. Your system is going to change from season to season based on who's there and the character types that are in play, correct?
Yes, and who won last season, which is what I really, really like about it.
Yeah.
Because it shifts, obviously. So when Natalie wins and suddenly, oh no, you didn't, is on the map for winners, it bumps someone else into worse spot.
Speaking of last season's winner, just as a total aside, that I forgot what I said in the house where Nicole had said something and I had said to her, like, bro, I know. And then Dominic is now just repeating, like, bro, I know, constantly. Like, all right, that's not really that nice. Don't call your mom bro. Let's not do that.
My kids say, how dare you?
Yeah.
Whose fault
bro,
is that?
Bro, I know.
Yeah. All right. So, Angie, let's get into it. All right. So number 20 of the millennials and the Gen Xers. Here we go.
Yeah. And the first boot spot is our Meredith Grey.
Okay.
And our Meredith Grey for this season is Jessica Lewis.
Okay. By the way, let me just congratulate you as we were talking about first boots that the listeners of Robin's podcast have spoken and voted your team of first boots the most likely to contain the winner of Survivor first boot. So there you go.
I was very happy to hear that. I was ridiculously invested in the outcome of that. I really wanted to win.
Yeah, you took it very seriously. I was very surprised. I believe that the voters named my team third place. I don't know what they're thinking. I feel like that maybe was some sort of a bias where they didn't really want to make it, like, they probably thought that my team was the best, but they felt bad too. Like, it was like insulting to everybody else if they all voted for me. That everybody was gonna say, oh, they're just playing favorites. So there must have been some psychological reason why they didn't vote for my team.
Yeah, I was mentally prepared for that.
Yeah,
I was mentally prepared for that to happen. No, honestly, I feel like you guys were trying to make a fun podcast, and I was just being super competitive. So
you don't think it was just that the Fangies turned out the vote for you?
I don't know. There were a lot of people on Twitter that I'm just like, I don't even know who this person is, but you know, they're like, where do I go to vote for Angie? I love it.
Okay, so sorry, I stepped on the first boot of the season. Is who?
It is Jessica Lewis. It's our 37
Gen X Jessica.
Yeah. That's our assistant district attorney.
I came so close to picking her as a winner.
Meredith Grays are the worst. And it, they are just simply the worst. And it breaks my heart because I actually really love Jessica.
All right.
I really did.
So
I really did.
Explain to the listeners what you mean by a Meredith Grey.
Okay. So a Meredith Grey is a woman who's aged roughly between 25 and 35, who's established in a professional career. So this is usually a doctor, a lawyer, a cop, or a teacher. And their issue is that they're very smart, super intense, very high energy. So ultimately, these players are way too intense. They go too hard. They try to take too much control way too early on. And thanks to Natalie's win in San Juan del Sur, Meredith Grey is officially the worst player in Survivor.
Oh, no.
Yeah.
Why did Natalie affect this?
Because the Oh No You Didn't used to be the worst.
Okay.
And now she's bumped them all up, only by one spot, but bumped them all up. This is mostly because, like, you have to look at it from a data perspective. This is mostly because they've had more chances than any other female character type. So look at it this way. Out of 27 chances, they've never won once and have only made it to the finals twice.
Mm.
So they have the lowest average placement of every single character type on the board.
But you would think that these sort of blue collar professional women or I shouldn't necessarily blue collar because in the case of Jessica, she's a lawyer. Mm-hmm. But you would think these working professional women would be well suited to Survivor, no? It's counterintuitive.
It is counterintuitive. But I don't know. I mean, I think there's a pattern with Survivor that if you come across as too intelligent and playing too hard and working it too much early on in the game, you just become a target. Or these people that are, these people that are just almost too book smart. Like if you look at the two spectrums of Meredith Grey, imagine you have Sarah Lucina on one side, Elizabeth mm-hmm. Markham on the other. So Sarah had really good instincts, but not a lot of game theory. Elizabeth was like off the charts book smart, but lacked people skills. So this is kind of their problem. But both of them get really stubborn. They have a hard time. Like they make up their mind and then they don't bend. It's about being adaptable. It's about being able to compromise. It's about realizing that certainly in the early days of the game, just go with it. They just seem unable to do that. And they really want to I want to make something happen. And it's day three. It's too much.
Yeah.
So,
and I think it's way above my pay grade to talk about any sort of gender politics of Survivor. But I think that for both sexes, go with the flow is a great idea. But I do think that there is something threatening about the woman that comes into Survivor that really wants to, that has a lot of authority in her day job, comes into the game and starts, giving orders to people. I find that while it doesn't work great for a lot of the male Survivor players, whether it's an Andrew Savage or a Brad Culpepper, it sometimes works for the male players, but it seems like it hasn't ever worked yet for a female player.
No. And certainly this might get me in trouble, but I think culturally U.S. Survivor is a little bit more guilty of that as well. That it's just you really have to play your cards right as a female playing in the U.S. Survivor, I think, because even if you are controlling everything, you need to look like you're not.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And it's true for men as well, but
it is.
But
it
it's
is
more
definitely.
True for women. In Survivor. Again, we're just talking about what happened, not how it should be.
Yeah. Yeah. And we're only talking about Survivor. I don't want to get into big political commentary about it.
I thought you were going to say Big Brother.
Yeah. Well, that I wouldn't mind.
Okay.
While I love Jessica's tattoos and her can-do attitude, and honestly, her handstand makes my heart smile, I think she is kind of in big trouble.
Is there anything that a player can do once you say, okay, you're Erin Brockovich, because you're a lawyer, is there anything that she could be doing in her bio or anything like that that could sort of like say, yeah, well, but I feel good about you. I think that you might be the exception and maybe can move her around either up the board or anything like that.
Well, I don't know if I would want to move her up the board, and I'm going to get to this at the end of the podcast, but I do have some ideas about how to move the system kind of to the next level, which might make that more possible.
Yes.
But I do think that if ever there was a Meredith Grey who had a chance, I do think it's Jessica. I think it's because she's very grassroots. She's down homey as well as being intelligent. So if she can just kind of embrace the tattoo side of her versus the district attorney side and just lay low and just get along with people, she might be okay. But according to the system, Jessica's pooched.
She has researched the life of Cerie Fields.
That is good. I mean, I for her sake, I really hope she is most like Ceri. And she does seem pretty tough too. But I worry for her. I worry for her. Because she's, you simply cannot succeed as a prosecutor and not be an A-type personality. And A-type personalities do not do well on Survivor unless you're highly devious and super high energy, like a Tony Vlachos.
The charisma really has to be off the charts too to make that work.
Yeah. I mean, I would not wish that kind of gameplay on anyone. I don't know how easy that is to pull off, but it doesn't look very easy at all.
I think it's tough. Yeah. All right. Yeah. So then let's talk about our 19th place, our second potential boot, according to the system.
Yes. So that is our, oh no, you didn't character type. So this is a woman who is loud. Sometimes they can be a bit bossy. They have big opinions, but they're also very outgoing. They can have a very strong social game. They can be physically strong. But often they're kind of explosive. They don't put up with any BS.
Mm-hmm.
So in this character type, I really struggled with this one. But ultimately, I decided on Michaela.
Okay. Michaela.
For Michaela. So this is actually the hardest character type to cast. Because the Jatia in the group doesn't say in her preseason interview that she's going to freak out and dump the rice in the fire. Like, they never come out and say that. Mm. So, I mean, there were three female players who indicated that they can be aggressive or feisty if pushed.
Mm-hmm.
The reason why I landed on Michaela is because although she says she's very rational and immune to rejection, all of her pet peeves were about other people's behavior when dealing with her.
Yeah.
So she's too young to be the Erin Brockovich. I really wanted to put her there. And if she were athletic, I would have hands down put her as the G.I. Jane. Hands down. Because her attitude seems really, really tough and really just really, really focused on what needs to be done out there. But since she listed one of her hobbies as cuddling, ironically, this makes her the, oh no, you didn't.
Why is that?
Because the hobbies are usually like, I like to lift weights. I like rock climbing. I like to go kayaking. And it's usually, and that would be like a G.I. Jane type of thing or like target shooting. But because she's like, I like to eat and cuddle. I'm like, mm-hmm. I don't think she is that physically threatening. So she was really a tough one to figure out what to do with.
So when you try to figure out this character type, I mean, what is it specifically that you're looking for? Are you just looking for that things that point to confrontation in the bio?
Yeah, I'm looking for Abby Maria. I'm looking for Nayanka. I'm looking for Alicia from One World. Someone who's just going to freaking go off in your face and scare the crap out of you. That's what I'm looking for.
The Twinnies Natalie winning bring this up, but I guess that Nadia being the first boot, I think, didn't do anything. If anything, it just sort of like gave them like an average of like ninth place.
It brought it up slightly, but as a
win percentage.
Yeah, this character type often gets kind of overlooked because people are like, oh, no one's ever going to vote for them. You know, but other times they're so annoying. They get knocked off right away, like Carolina from Tokachins. Like, they just forget it.
Mm-hmm. Now, are you just reading the bio or are you watching the video? Because I'm trying to remember from Michaela's video if she seemed super confrontational.
She didn't. From her, like, I'm watching the video, I'm reading the bio. I was reading Wiggler's articles as well as Gordon Holmes. Last season, I kept it just to the bio and video, and I felt like I wasn't getting enough information. Mm-hmm. Especially about this character type. Because I got to tell you, Alicia was an oh no, you didn't for sure. She was in there. No way was she an Erin Brockovich. And that just did not come through in her bio and video at all. But it came very, very clear very early on.
That's why she was on the Braun Tribe. Because she was she didn't take lip from anybody.
No, she didn't take any crap.
Yeah.
So, I mean, similarly, Michaela, I mean, it's clear she has zero tolerance for BS. And when she's talking, when she's talking tough, it's like she just kind of dies inside. Like, all the emotion drains from her as she looks right through the camera. And while she says she won't take the emotions of the game to heart, I think she's going to have trouble connecting with people. And I think she's going to call someone a dumbass on day one. Honestly.
On day one.
I think it's going to be all downhill from there.
Don't do it, Michaela.
Yeah. Hide the rice.
Delilah. For Michaela, though, I do think that maybe one area where there could be potential conflict, I do think that she is probably the least millennial-like millennial. And if like that millennial vibe, that like of the idea of sort of, entitled, spoiled, sort of like young people who aren't prepared to work hard, which is sort of like what I think the show is trying to depict in terms of the millennial tribe. If that attitude is embraced by the actual people that are in the millennial tribe, I think that she might be the person who might take the most exception to it.
It's going to drive her crazy. Because, yeah, I really like that. Her attitude is completely just straight as an arrow, cuts through all the crap. You do what you got to do and don't let it bother you. But she's going to call, you know, she's going to call people out when they start being lazy or being rude or, you know, like I'm hoping she can keep it together because she could do well. That's really the only downfall to the, oh no, you didn't. If you don't get in fights, you do okay.
All right. We'll see if she can buck the system for Michaela. All right. The third boot on this season, who does the system think it could be?
Okay, so this is the first of my three controversial moves this season.
Okay.
Are you ready?
I'm right. Always ready for a controversy.
Okay, so this is the first radical change I am making in the system since its inception. So in this order, the 18th person is my Perez Hilton character type.
Okay.
It is no surprise that my Perez Hilton character type is problematic. It's been a thorn in my side from the very beginning.
Yes.
And that's because this description is too limiting in some ways and too broad in others. And in particular, this season, there are two players that are completely challenging this character type for me.
Okay.
So my solution is I'm going to rename it.
All right.
Yes. And I'm going to call it the social butterfly.
The social butterfly. All right. Wow. Yes. This is big.
Breaking news are happening now.
We are live with Angie Kontz, who is reporting the first ever rebranding of a character type in her system. Angie, what was the cause? It was that going through season 33, you were unable to really fit the person to the character or the character to a person?
It was a little bit of both. I mean, the premise of the social butterfly is the same, like someone who's super social, someone who's witty, extremely likable, quirky, outgoing, flamboyant, basically someone who can get along with anyone. So the perfect example of the Perez Hilton personality is Bryce Isaiah. But mm-hmm. I keep feeling like I'm forcing players into the character type simply because they're the gay player.
Yes.
So while Reed, I believe, was a social butterfly, I feel like Josh, for example, was more of an alpha male or a know-it-all type. Mm-hmm. And what I needed to start asking myself is, did this player get cast because he was the gay guy? Or is this player who was cast for his game acumen also happen to be gay?
Mm-hmm.
Right?
Okay.
On the other side of the issue, which is your original question, this is a very long-winded answer, there is a player this season who identifies as straight who I feel is the social butterfly. So I'm changing it.
Okay. All right.
So I may get pushback that this player is, in fact, as super social as I think he is, but I don't think I will get resistance on changing the character type because I've, like, from the very first podcast, people have said, first of all, I hate Perez Hilton. Why would you use that as the name? And second of all, it's
the person
limiting.
Or the name?
The person.
Okay.
It's limiting. And it works for the most part, but there have been a couple of players in history that it's never really sat right for me.
I think there's been an evolution in the system. This is the voting blocks of the character type system.
It shifts around every single vote. It's different.
Okay. All right. So where
ready?
Are we going?
My social butterfly this season is David Wright.
All right. David Wright. All right.
Yeah. Weird, right?
If he's the social butterfly, then why is he out so early?
Because this character type doesn't do so well so much anymore. But I don't know. The numbers don't lie.
Yeah.
He was the piece that was breaking the puzzle. Like he was making really hurting my brain. So
and he does 3D puzzles.
I know, right? So as soon as I made this shift, all the men fell into place for me. So you might ask, why would I put the compulsive neurotic guy who hates people as the social butterfly?
Mm-hmm.
And it's because Cochran had a great social game and he was like all of those things as well. And because of all the interviews I read, he charmed the pants off of everybody. Like Wiggler loved him. Gordon Holmes loved him. He's actually very, very likable.
Yeah.
And so if he's like Cochran, why am I not putting him as the know-it-all? Because unlike Cochran, he isn't a Harvard educated super survivor nerd. So the challenge with the men this season is that there's so many highly intelligent supervans and they're all unique, but vying for the same spots in the system. So if I get accused of shoehorning, it's likely going to be this one right here.
Okay.
I get the call for that. But
I don't hate the rebranding. I think it's a good, like the only thing is the slot. I feel like that I can't see David out that early. I feel like he's going to do well. And I think that you're right. I think he's going to be very social. But I guess if he has like a complete aversion to being out there and ends up being like useless in the challenges for some reason, I guess I could see it. But I don't agree with the placement. But I think that the if that's what the system is saying, then who am I to quibble?
Yeah, it's tough when the numbers spit out something I don't like.
OK,
but it's I think he's a big wild card. I mean, from, you know, what we know of him, it's very, very it's hard to tell how he's going to do. Like all of his pet peeves make like his pet peeve makes him like one of my pet peeves. Like he's calling out the misuse of a relatively obscure word, which is really an indirect way of propping up his own language knowledge. Mm-hmm. So, you know, basically he's a grammar Nazi, which is not fun on a desert island.
Yeah.
Right.
There are not many opportunities to be proofreading people, and those things are only at tribal council. So,
oh, he'll correct their sentences.
Well, he is a writer.
He'll say, "I believe you meant with whom" in that sentence. Yeah, he'll do. He'll
what
do
is
that.
He, Stephen
sure.
Fishback.
Okay. Oh God, is he going to recite poetry?
Perhaps.
Maybe. Also, I mean, he plans on using his experience on Survivor as a means to deal with personal anxiety. Considering that the game makes perfectly balanced people crazy, I am seeing a shoulder rub from Probst in his future.
That just might be something you say, though, on the like when on your essay, and maybe not
you
something
think?
You might actually believe. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, I think if he can keep it together and not be condescending to the other players who don't talk good, he might make it further than 18th. But I'm not holding my breath.
What about 17th place, the fourth person out of the season?
It's your favorite. It's the pony boy slot.
The pony boy. Okay. Who is the pony boy? I feel like you got a few different choices here between some of these different pony boys I see out there. Where are you going with this?
There's so many choices. This one was a hard one to cast as well. I landed on Adam Klein as our
Adam.
Pony boy.
Okay. That's not who I would have gone with.
I know. That's what I mean. It's a quirky season. He came across to me like the Jewish Eric Reichenbach. Honestly,
that's good.
Yeah. He's very sweet. He's good natured. He's a humanitarian. He's the pony boy because he has a non-conventional job and he ultimately seems too nice for this game. So while he was the top of his Stanford class, I mean, that kind of follows with last year's trend because I had Neil as a pony boy and he was on the Brains tribe as well.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't know about you. Like he seems friendly. He's also coming off as a little boring.
Oh, no, I actually feel like he's going to be very good this season, but I wonder if he's going, like, I feel like he's going to come in and be sort of like a golden boy and that everybody is going to really like him being around. So I feel like that the pony boy like struggles to fit in, right?
They're a little bit on the outside. And I think the fact that, you know, he's coming in as like a not-for-profit manager, which is a little bit unconventional. For even amongst a millennial, that's a little unconventional.
Mm-hmm.
You know, his motivation for being there is like, I'm playing for a sick mom. I want to share the joy with my family. But I don't know. Call me callous, but I don't think that makes him a threat. I think that makes him unstable.
Callous! Like
I would not want to align with the guy who's about to get the call any minute. You know? Like, seriously.
Yeah.
So.
Boy. So cynical, Angie.
I am very cynical. I'm looking at this just from a play, like a strategic perspective.
Yeah.
Also, I thought it was pretty funny that he's not just a super fan. He's a super duper fan.
Yes.
And super fan just isn't enough. Like, did we have a problem with super fan? Did we feel like super fan just didn't cut it anymore? And if so, Rob, where does the one upmission end? Where does it end, Adam?
Okay. So you think that there should be a moratorium on super duper fan? You're either a super fan or a casual. There's only you want to have like the Nicole binary 0 or 1.
I think that's what we need, because honestly, I think that super fans are looking at, you know, slightly more advanced casuals calling themselves super fans, and they want to, you know, they want to label themselves differently. They want to be set apart from that. But it's like, that's a slippery slope, my friend.
Right. Does super duper fan differentiate between the casual who thinks they're a super fan of like, oh man, I am a super fan. I watch Survivor every week. And then Adam, the super duper fan, is like, well, I'm posting on Reddit. I'm doing this. I could tell you this. Like, I feel like that there might be some distinction between the person, the poser, super fan to differentiate from that person, you're a super duper fan.
Potentially. I think the word duper is a little bit immature. So I think that sets you apart in a different way. You know, like the super fans I know will differentiate themselves by saying I'm a hardcore super fan. Mm-hmm. So just so you know, like I like listen to podcasts about it and they go, oh, well, that's something else. I don't do that.
Are there super fangies?
Yeah, probably.
Let alone super duper fangies. See, I think I probably just don't agree that Adam is the pony boy. I feel like that there are all these different people, whether it's the, I guess I'm confusing them too much with the surfer dudes that are out there. But I feel like that you have so many surfer dude type guys that you could make one of them the pony boy.
Pony boy isn't usually that kind of like, whoa, dude, mm-hmm. kind of guy. They're usually like the one that's a little bit very different. Like Zane was a pony boy, you know, someone that's got a different kind of job, that they've got a different kind of vibe to them. You know, they're motorcycle repairmen and they're just not quite the cookie cutter, as opposed to I find like that kind of surfer Venice Beach type is very like dime a dozen.
Well, Adam, you have coming in fourth place. So far, this season is going to be terrible, Angie. Getting rid of all these good people so early.
I was very excited by this cast, by the way. There's a lot of really good people here. I'm very excited to watch it.
All right.
So not so much for this next guy. So the next spot is for our Seduce and Destroy.
Okay. I always love the Seduce and Destroy.
Yeah. So this is the young professional guy. He's often in marketing or sales. He considers himself a ladies' man. He's super arrogant, but he thinks he's extraordinarily charming.
The Drew Christie.
Yeah. Basically, he's a badass.
Yes, basically.
So this year's Seduce and Destroy is Jay Starrett.
Okay. Let's talk about Jay. He was somebody that I had a hard time putting a finger on in terms of what he is.
Yeah. I mean, usually what I do is I'm reading the bios and doing the videos. I will start writing down character types in the margin beside their name based on what they could be and which I think is most likely. And the first thing I wrote down was surfer dude for him mm-hmm. until I met the other surfer dude. I'm like, okay, scratch that. He's definitely got to be the Seduce and Destroy.
Okay.
So Jay is a classic Seduce and Destroy. The modern Seduce and Destroy can be recognized in the wild as the coiffed young man who's overly confident, thinks he's more intelligent, more charming, and more beautiful than he actually is. So he tends not to have a great read on the people around him. He tends to think he's running the show when in fact he's just getting eye rolls.
Yeah.
You know? So straight out of the bio, Jay misused out of the box in his bio. So before he's even started, he's already behind.
Give me the context.
And David's going to hate this guy for
that.
Yeah,
I was going to say, he's picking David apart for doing it. And you're doing the same exact thing. What a hypocrite.
I am a hypocrite. Oh, my God. He says millennials do things that are out of the box. So they're basically plug and play. As soon as you get them home, take them out of the box. They're good to go. He's an iPhone.
Okay, so that should be outside of the box.
Yes, because I feel like they almost got crib notes, like when you're supposed to talk about your generation, because you notice all the millennials say, we think outside of the box, and all the Generation Xers are all like, we never had anything handed to us. We didn't get trophies for showing up. I'm like, it's the same thing over and over and over.
Is it possible he's saying that millennials are predictable? They do things just sort of like they get the box, and then there's no modifications needed. They're doing things just straight out of the box. They're unboxing.
They're unboxing. They're good to go. Why would you change it? It's perfect.
Yeah.
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 So he says also he's like Russell and Wu.
Yeah. And
I think this statement makes all the super duper fans cringe. Right? This screams, I have no idea what I'm doing out here.
Yeah. Those are two people.
You can't have it both ways, Jay. You have to choose a side.
Yeah. I don't even like being in a box.
So he's almost like an edgy surfer dude, but not quite. You know, he's like Tyson's not so smart and funny cousin. Mm. We don't talk to that cousin.
Did you say and funny or unfunny cousin?
Unfunny.
Yeah.
He's not funny.
Boy. Tyson's unfunny cousin. Is that better or worse than being Dan Giesling's cousin-in-law?
Probably worse.
Probably worse. Okay. Yeah. All right. So, yeah, that's Jay. I don't really have a good feel on what he's going to be like. We'll have to wait till September 21st to get a sense of that.
These guys are so predictable. Honestly, they always play it like exactly the same way. Yeah, these guys always play it exactly the same way. It's like they get handed like a little rule book before they go out there, and they think they got it all. They got it all on lock, and they really just come across as very, very arrogant and very kind of slimy. They think that that they're being very charming, and everybody sees right through it right away.
But that's always fun, blindside.
Yeah, it's spectacular blindside. It's awesome to watch, but it's just it's the same old. It's the same thing over and over again, which is pretty, it's pretty funny. As Kat says, it's pretty funny to watch.
All right. So there we go. 15th place, the sixth boot.
That would be our specialist.
The specialist. All right.
Who does not love the specialist? So to remind everyone, the specialist.
A lot of people.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah. To remind everyone, the specialist is eccentric, a little crazy, full of himself, and a huge character with huge stories.
All right.
So the person who is larger than life and full of air has got to be Paul.
Paul. Yeah. That's where I thought you were going with this.
Yeah.
Paul Wachter.
Yeah. He's the treasure hunting Hulk Hogan. So, of course, he's the specialist for sure.
Yeah. All right. So what is it about Paul that feels like that he's going to be the sixth person out of the season?
Well, he can't stop talking. So I think that could be a problem for him. I think with most specialists, the other players are going to find him annoying. He has big ideas. Yeah, he has big ideas, and he's going to talk like he's done everything there is to do. But I mean, and to his credit, he also came across as kind of wise in the interviews that I read. And I kind of like him. So I was a little bit tempted to make him the Heisenberg, honestly, but he just doesn't seem to be that mean. Like he says, he's a big teddy bear, and you know, it's not his fault. He looks like a scary biker.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. His range of outcomes is pretty diverse, I think, where he could be the first boot or, you know, he could be like sort of like the first person out in the finale.
Yeah. Yeah. It really could, like, it could go either way. I can see that happening for sure.
Mm-hmm.
I liked his reasons for homeschooling his kids. Like most people homeschool because they want to limit the exposure their kids are getting to their immediate environment. And I thought it was kind of funny that Paul wanted to limit his kids' exposure to North Carolina.
Yeah. Well, he won't be invited to be in the North Carolina alliance with Chase Rice and Jane.
He will not. He's like, no, he's booting it out of there. And yeah, the other thing that's interesting, you know, he gets up and nothing gets him down. You've got it tough, but he's seen the toughest all around. He's playing this game asking himself, WWDLRD, what would David Lee Roth do, Rob?
Yes. Yes. Don't ask that question.
Yeah. So I guess he's going to be looking for like a hot teacher from California. I don't know.
Boy, Paul should be fun. I'm hoping he sticks around.
I think he's going to be a really fun character. He's going to be a big character. So yeah, it would be a waste of a good casting, a good casting job there if he goes home right away.
Angie, will treasure hunting serve a survivor well in terms of finding hidden immunity idols?
I don't know. Do you think it will? Because all of the stuff he does is underwater using like metal detectors. That's kind of like, that's cheating.
Yeah, I guess so. But I do think you probably have to like comb the desert to try to find stuff. So I think you probably like have like a good eye for like, oh, what's that? That's something shiny over there. Let me get my metal detector. So I think at least the first step of like knowing where to look for stuff with the metal detector, I think he might be observant.
Yeah, I think he's probably very patient. Like, remember Rupert finding the part of the fishing spear in Pearl Islands? Like, I sense that about him. Like, he's like, okay, I'm going to comb this beach and I'm going to be here for hours and eventually I'm going to find it because this is what I do.
Mm-hmm.
And potentially being smart about looking in little nooks and crannies. But I don't know. I don't know how he's going to be able to do that without people noticing.
Hard for Paul to move around and not have people notice wherever he's going. It just seemed like everybody was talking about him in the bio videos of like, there's this one guy who looks like, it's like an 80s rocker Hulk Hogan type guy.
Yeah, surfing Santa was one of the ones they said too.
They all had a different description of him. All right. So then Angie, the seventh person out of the season, according to the system,
Our Lady Gaga.
Lady Gaga. What is a Lady Gaga?
So a Lady Gaga is someone who's kind of flaky, a little bit new agey. She's definitely not mainstream. She's generally not strategic and she can be a little bit spacey.
Okay. So this Lady Gaga, very mainstream.
I know. And she's very driven and she's got a very successful career. So
yes,
that was probably not the right thing to call her. But in terms of like representing someone who's outside of, doesn't fit in necessarily with what everyone else is doing, that's kind of what we had in mind with the Lady Gaga.
Okay. So, all right. So where is your Lady Gaga this season?
This season, our Lady Gaga is Figgy, the bartender.
Figgy. Okay. Yeah.
So she is an adventurous crowd pleaser. She says she's the most like Stephanie, who was so strategic.
Yeah.
So she's coming from the survivor school of, come on, guys, why can't you just win? Why do you have to suck so hard?
Yes. She just wants to win.
So Figgy up and moved to Nashville, where she didn't know anyone after a bad breakup. So this can be seen as a little flaky or very courageous. Like it might be like she's just trying to get a geographical cure to everything she doesn't like about herself, or it could be that she's fearless. So she doesn't have much of a career path going on, which is a Lady Gaga move for sure. I don't have much to say about Figgy, but I also didn't have a lot to say about Michelle, and that totally blew up in my face.
Well, here's another bartender that you don't think that Figgy has Fitzy upside?
She does. That's the thing. And I do see some similarities there. Also, in her interview with Wiggler, she reminded me a lot of Jen Brown.
Oh, boy.
Yeah, let's hope that's not a thing. Because, yeah. So she could be very much like Michelle. She could be. I don't know. She's the one that said she was feisty. So hopefully she's not blowing up anybody's yeah. game. I don't know. I don't know how feisty she means.
She's just the type of player to me that I feel like is never going to not make the merge, where she's just going to, that she's attractive, she's athletic, she seems like she's easygoing. I know you're saying that she's potentially confrontational, but unless she's just a total disaster, like who's coming for Figgy?
I would agree with that. Plus, I find that there's a bit of an advantage with people who don't know the game extremely well, mm-hmm. and that they don't even have the option to play hard because they don't even know what that means.
Yeah. I mean, it happens sometimes where somebody who doesn't like in the Drew Christie type scenario where the person who knows nothing severely overplays. And we see that a lot on Big Brother as well. Yes. There's always like one person who knows nothing who is like a lunatic the first couple of weeks. But I do think that there is something to, I have no idea what I'm doing. I'm going to slow play this. And I feel like it almost always works out well for a while.
Yeah, for sure. For sure. And she could definitely do that. I could see her doing that.
Yeah.
But yeah. I think she's merge material.
Yeah. You know, the first couple of weeks of the game, you can't win it there, but you certainly can lose it. And I think the person who's overplaying more often is going to lose the game as opposed to the person who doesn't really have any idea what they're doing.
As long as there's no reason to target her at the beginning, like doing the first boot draft really made me realize that it really doesn't take much at all. Like I think Paul was saying in his interview, like, you know, these young people calling you out for the color of your pants on your first day. Like it's so difficult to predict. So as long as you don't screw up, as long as you don't make yourself overly noticeable, and as long as you don't start a fight with anybody or try and be a bossy leader or something, you really can be okay.
But a tribe of 10 also, I think that she's probably going to be safe there. It's not like that she can get on the wrong side of the numbers in a 6-person group. So I think Figgy is going to be okay. I'd be surprised if she's just 14th place.
You think she's going to go further than that?
I think she'll go further than that. Yeah. I think that she's probably around into the merge. And I feel like that maybe her floor might be like a Julia Sokolowski.
I don't know if she'll know enough to get into a really tight alliance. I think she'll just think that she can just float around and be personable.
Maybe not on day one, but I feel like that, you know, anybody that is conscious, I think, figures out. I think she'll figgy it out at some point.
You went there.
Yeah. All right. So let's talk about the 13th place person this season, according to the system. Are we at the merge yet? Is this a dateable person? The merge was in Cambodia.
Was it 13?
Yeah.
Yeah, well, then we're at the merge.
Okay. All right.
Which is a good thing because our Mr. Miyagi is good looking.
Good looking Miyagi. All right. Yeah. Tell me more, Angie.
Our Mr. Miyagi this season is Ken McNichol, the 33-year-old model.
The Heiden? Growing up, they told him about Heidens who were just like having like all of this.
Oh, that's right. He goes off about hedonism.
Yeah. Yeah. But then
I know you could be a heathen.
He said, I believe he described himself as a heathen.
David's going to hate this guy too.
Yeah. And then he has a daughter and he now has to not be so much of a heathen.
Yeah. He has
part-time heathen.
Yeah. His days of being a jerk are over because now he's a dad.
Yes.
That's what I gleaned from his bio.
Yes. The Barney Stinson of season 33. The love of his life is his daughter.
That's it. So Ken was a tricky one for me to place. So he is the first Mr. Miyagi model.
Yes.
He is there because he's altruistic and laid back and because of his age. So while he's a competitive type, he also seems very compassionate and likely a Buddhist like Tai. I'm saying that because he's inspired by the Dalai Lama.
Then he's not talking Dalai Lama, is he?
No, he's not talking Dalai Lama. In isolation, like the idea of anyone making that noise is just so crazy.
That's Tony talking Dalai Lama. Look, I know Richard Gere, okay? I could talk Dalai Lama anytime.
All day.
Yeah.
Can I just say, though, that I really like it when people name a famous person as their inspiration in life.
Yes.
Like, I like that Ken doesn't admire his parents. It's sweet and all, but it tells us nothing about you. And it's kind of arrogant. Like, of all the people who ever lived, I'm going to have to say my mom is the greatest one. Like, mm-hmm. If my kids ever pull that crap, I am sending them back to school because clearly they didn't learn anything.
So you like he goes Dalai Lama here?
I like it. I do. I do. But I mean, as for the objects he wants to bring, one of them is a Frisbee. Mm-hmm. I friggin' hate Frisbee. Like, he's already alienating all the people like me out there. So that's not a good start. He says he's most like Ozzy because of his easy temperament. So clearly he's overlooking the free agent temper tantrum.
What is it you hate the most about the Frisbee?
It's just, it's boring. It's awkward. It always like bangs off my hand. Like, I am not an athletic person. It's just a waste of time. Like, throw a ball around. Like, what's the stupid disc that's just randomly like catching the wind and blowing away? I hate that. It always ends up on the roof. Like, damn it.
I don't love the Frisbee, but I'm probably more agnostic to the Frisbee.
When people are always like, let's throw a Frisbee. Yay.
Like, yeah, less moving parts and having the Frisbee catch. I feel like that less people will make fun of my throwing with the Frisbee.
You find it easier to throw a Frisbee than like a baseball?
Yeah, I feel
that's
like that.
That's crazy.
Yeah, I think it's just more of a like a horizontal plane motion as opposed to more moving parts in terms of like throwing the football or the baseball.
Throwing a baseball is direct. It's straight to the point. This Frisbee with your wrist flicky thing, I just can't. I can't even.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah. So he mentions that he wants to play like Ozzy because Ozzy was resourceful. That was one hell of an effing stick, I guess. So. Ken reminds me of LJ crossed with Penner, right? So he's edgy and competitive like Penner, but kind of hot and easygoing like LJ.
I mean, I'm just still trying to wrap my head around LJ and Penner as one person. I feel like I could trust somebody that's cute, but not somebody who's hot. Avoid the hot. Stick to cute, bub. Yeah.
Yeah, you're right. That really exemplifies the point, doesn't it?
I don't know.
Yeah. It's tricky because there are so many, there's so many different, I don't know, people's personalities are wildly different, even though the things that kind of, the similarities between them remain consistent. And you got to remember that Penner was also pretty far out of the scope. Like, he was right on the edge of the Mr. Miyagi. He was almost a Heisenberg. Like, he was really kind of a crossover player, where someone like Tai is much more consistent with that kind of just kind and compassionate, very feeling person. Mm-hmm. He's very social. He's good at pulling people together. And Penner does have that. Like, the Ponderosa videos, he's the guy that makes everything okay.
Mm-hmm.
You know?
See, the thing, though, that I get confused with in Mr. Miyagi, are we looking for the person who is the sort of Zen master, who is sort of like at peace with the universe? Or are we looking for the person who, like Mr. Miyagi to Daniel-san, was sort of like the older person who was like sage with wisdom, who was trying to like teach and take a young person under their wing?
It's both. That's the thing. So when someone screws up in the challenge, Mr. Miyagi is the one who puts his arm around him and says, son, it's going to be okay. Mm-hmm. It's not the end of the world, you know?
Although ironically here, though, if he was the 33-year-old millennial, I could definitely see him in that role. But yet he is the 33-year-old Gen Xer. He is the baby of the Gen Xers.
He is, but he's the grandpa to all the millennials.
Yeah, but he's on the tribe with the Gen Xers.
Yeah, yeah. I don't know how well he's going to fit in with those guys, honestly. He may have a bit of a tough time.
Yeah. I think he's the most millennial Gen Xer. I think that's his problem here.
Yeah, he and Michaela need to do a tribe swap.
So I think that that would actually be good if they could do some sort of a twist like that. He belongs to the millennials or his people. So if he can ride out the storm with the, you know, hardworking Gen Xers, then we don't have any reason to believe he's going to be lazy either. But I think that's sort of like, I think that spiritually, he's much more akin to the millennials.
He is. He's super competitive too, though. So I don't, I think some of the millennials are driven, but I don't know if they're driven to the same degree as these Gen Xers. They are. They're not fooling around.
Yeah. He caught a break by them not letting him bring a ukulele and a frisbee to the island, because the Gen Xers take one look at that and say, all right.
Just like bash it right over his head. Yeah.
Right. Like Animal House. All right. So let's talk about 12th place. What 12th do you got? Place
is our secretly smart bikini babe.
All right. Explain that, the secretly smart bikini babe.
Okay, so this is usually a young girl. Again, the ages of this season are completely wackadoo. It's a young girl, usually ages 20 to 25, and she is like our pre-law, pre-med student. She's very pretty, she's very intelligent, and she's very attractive, but it's not always obvious how intelligent she is. So she can kind of hide behind her bikini a little bit.
Okay.
But she's usually quite a smart player. So the notable past ones, so this would be like your Alexis, Amanda, Candace, Eliza, Heidi, Elizabeth, and Colleen Haskell. So those are the traditional mm-hmm. bikini babes. So in this slot this season, I have no idea
where you're going with this.
Yeah, you don't know who it's going to be?
No.
No, it's going to be Mary.
Mary? Oh, okay. Yeah. All right.
She is not a conventional secretly smart bikini babe, but she fits the definition very, very well.
Okay.
So she is a bit old for this character type, but she doesn't look old. She's a highly successful up-and-comer, very driven. So on one hand, she could have been the Lady Gaga because of her non-traditional job being a YouTube gamer. But I feel like her intelligence and success kind of shuttles her into this type.
Okay.
So traditionally, the secretly smart bikini babe stumbles trying to make real bonds with others, especially with women. So they're very intense. They're sometimes paranoid and annoying. They're overthinkers. Ultimately, they end up getting like cut last minute, like Eliza and Heidi, or losing against the ride or die like Amanda did.
Okay.
So I think that Mary has a lot of fans across the internet and is likely good at the social game as a result. Although how much one-on-one interaction she does with those fans, I don't know. My biggest concern with her is that she kind of screams recruit.
It's interesting. I feel very good. And again, she has the Nicole Stradamus bump.
She does. That's very intimidating.
Yes. Yes. And you're picking her to only be 12th place.
Only 12th. Yeah.
Yeah.
But she says she's not afraid to be a villain, which I think gives you a bit of an advantage in the game. But if you don't understand the game well, you can blunder very easily trying to be the bad guy.
Mm-hmm. Even if it's not a game she is super familiar with coming into it, I think as a professional video game player, I think that picking up the nuance of the game is going to come quicker to her than it might be for just anybody else who may not have a ton of experience with the show.
I would agree. Yeah. I would agree. I think she's going to be a very smart player. I'm very excited to see how she's going to do.
All right. There's Mari. Let's talk about 11th place, Angie. Who you got?
That is our alpha male control freak.
Okay. Always so fun.
So this is the guy who's like usually a CEO or a doctor or some other high power professional. He can be very bossy and very controlling. So this season, our alpha male control freak is Chris Hammonds.
All right. The AMCF, Chris Hammonds.
I really love Chris. Can I just say that? I really, really, really wanted to make him the good old boy and make him the most intelligent good old boy to ever play. But his bio just wouldn't let me. Mm. Like all of his description words say the same thing. He's super competitive, tenacious, and a fighter. He says he's a man's man and an alpha male. He actually says alpha male. So he left me no choice.
Yes. All right. So, he did this to himself.
He did it to himself. So my fear is that he'll overplay from the jump. He says he's going to be outspoken when someone crosses the line. Yeah, I think he's just going to have a hard time of this. He's going to take on a leadership role and bro down with the brochachos, and then the men will all turn on him faster than you can say, bro, I know.
Yeah, we don't say that. It's not nice. So, Angie, in terms of Chris, I came away with the feeling that, okay, yeah, that he definitely has that side to him, but I feel like that he is going to be able to be social and get along with the younger people. Is that just fan fiction? Am I making that up?
I do like how down to earth he is. I think he's going to have a really decent social game because of his more humble beginnings. But you can't be too strong in this game. Like, unless you're, again, unless you're willing to try and control every move like Tony. Mm-hmm. Like, does Chris have that in him? Like, if he can just behave like a JT type, he might be okay. But I don't trust him not to lead.
Yeah. You know? I mean, have we had sort of a country lawyer? I feel like that in some ways it's sort of like he's like the white collar, blue collar person coming together here. I feel like that's,
yes.
I like people that can sort of be the center of Venn diagrams.
He actually reminds me of like a real life Raylan Givens from Justified.
Mm-hmm.
And I plan on liking him immensely. Mm-hmm. I really do think I'm going to love this guy. And I hope he's like Scott was last year and he really just outperforms his character type and just really, really surprises everybody because I'm very, very fond of him. I like his personality.
I made him the winner pick, Angie. So it's probably he's doomed from the start.
I know you did.
But what are you going to do? All right.
I'm rooting for him. I really am. I like him a lot.
We'll see. All right. 10th place, Angie. Top 10 now.
Top 10 now.
Top half.
Through it. This is a big cast. Holy cow. Okay. So our 10th place person is our little Red Riding Hood.
Okay.
So this is our very young, very pretty pageant girl, often pageant girl, can be tough, but is not always particularly strategic.
Okay.
So in the past, we've got people like Julia last year, Jeffra, Kat, Angie Cookies, Nat 10, that type of character.
All right.
Jenna Maraska and Amber were the ones of this character type who've won in the past. So I've cast Michelle Schubert as our little Red Riding Hood.
Okay.
So despite her advanced years, 28 is very old for a little Red Riding Hood. So often this player is super young and is cast because of her kind of doe-eyed demeanor. Michelle is on the old side, but I think she fits the type. So my biggest issue with Michelle is that she lacks gravitas. Like, she seems to be almost silly in her bio. And maybe there's a fine line between witty and silly, but she's definitely planted her side on one side of it. She's planted her flag on one side of it, and it comes across as a little bit silly. So, like, for example, she puts hungry, hungry hippo. Like, what does that even mean?
I don't know. There's so much variance with the outcomes for Michelle in my mind that I think she has first boot upside, and I think that she could be somebody who goes really far in the game. I have no idea what to take from her. You know, she talks about playing games like Settlers of Catan, and maybe she has like a really fun personality, but I'm also sort of scared that she's going to be like really confrontational. Like, the thing she says about her boyfriend is like super weird.
Yeah. Yeah.
She has a secret that she's like, I'm gonna tell people I have a boyfriend.
I have a boyfriend. That's, yeah. It's like being a drama teacher. That's ridiculous.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, and if she plays Settlers, like, why the hell is she quoting Hungry, Hungry Hippo? That's a Gen X game, for what, for the record. And you know what? The Gen Xers are going to steal all of your marbles and they're going to eat them with their giant heads. That's what's going to happen.
Yeah.
So, like, she says she's most like Boston Rob. Remember that time B-Rob said his pet peeve was wipers on a dry windshield? I mean, annoying, right?
Yeah, that's right? So annoying. Yeah.
Yeah.
I have no idea with Michelle. I really don't.
I don't either. What I do like about her is that she does cross country. Like, any sort of endurance as opposed to brute strength, I believe, is a real advantage in the game.
Mm-hmm.
Just the physique of long distance runners versus bodybuilders, for example, is very advantageous. I think it's easier to sustain in the conditions of the game. And so many of the challenges are just about running your legs off until you can't even breathe and your lungs are going to explode. And I think if she's already like a long distance marathon runner, she could really have an advantage there.
Okay.
The other thing that was noticeable about her is she's super religious.
Yep.
So there are at least 5 super Christians playing this year. They may even be super duper Christians.
Super duper Christians?
Yeah. Oh, that's a final five right there. If they find each other, all the sinners are screwed. But that weirdness with her boyfriend and all that, like, she wants to play the flirt card and be the downfall of some man, but
like, I don't know, Delilah.
Just how flirty is a 28-year-old super Christian willing to be? Like, does she get that some people like she might have to go like all the way if she wants to be like
all the way, Angie?
I think people do that on this show.
What show?
On Survivor.
What people?
I don't want to name names, but I've heard stories.
All right, wow. Yeah, I'd like to hear.
I think Suri was talking about little Ozlets being made in the middle of the night, and I know that there are other people on this season.
I think that's very speculative.
Who were sneaking off into the woods with each other. Like, I just think it's funny that someone who seems very conservative would be like, oh, I'm willing to play the flirt card, but don't tell my boyfriend.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. I think she's out of her league if she's trying to be someone's poison apple. That's all I'm saying.
Yeah. I don't know. I don't think that's going to necessarily work. Again, she's could be all over the place, and I have no sense of how it's going to go for her.
But she could be like a Julia. She could completely shock and amaze because Julia really knew what the heck she was doing. I was super hard on her. I owe her an apology because I thought she was going to suck and she did really, really well.
Yeah, you were like really down on her for being in a sorority, right?
I was down on her for trying to play up non-existent life experience because I thought she sounded like a dumbass doing mm-hmm. that. But she did seem to really understand the game. She did very well.
She was good. And it's like the kind of thing where she was quiet early on and it served her well and nobody was really coming after her. But I don't think that Michelle is going to be somebody that we're not going to hear from. I think we're going to hear from her a lot.
Yeah, me too. I think she's going to make a target for herself. I think she's going to have trouble fitting in. I wouldn't be surprised if she was a very early boot.
I think so, too. I think I would be very surprised if she's at the merge.
Yeah. Okay. So I think the system is giving her too much credit.
And despite having a boyfriend, potentially undateable.
It doesn't matter if she's already got a boyfriend. She doesn't need it.
She's fine. She's fine. As long as he doesn't watch the show, she'll be fine. Okay. Ninth place, Angie.
Ninth place is our Siren.
Siren.
So our Siren is a very social, charming, pretty girl. So she often talks about how she flirts all the time or how she will use her feminine wiles to get ahead in the game. So this season's Siren is Rachel Acko.
What's your take on Rachel? Because I don't have her this high in my personal rankings.
She's pretty gorgeous, but she also seems pretty dippy. Like she wants to be honorable and all that crap. So I don't know how good of a siren she's going to be if she isn't manipulative.
Mm-hmm.
What she has going for her, Rob, is I can see her as being someone who's simply going to be like a very reliable number for her alliance. So I would want to bring her with me just because she's always going to do what she's told and honor and integrity and all that.
Mm-hmm. The thing with being on this tribe that she's on, like, unless it's just she's going to be the one woman who works with the guys, like, who are going to be her friends out of the women on her tribe?
I'm trying to think. Maybe Cece?
Maybe
I don't know.
I don't know.
Sunday's going to hate her.
Sunday's not going to like her.
No. She may have a hard time. But yeah. the boys are going to like her. I think the boys will shield her for sure.
I don't know. If she's not a hard worker, I feel like that some of these blue-collar guys are not going to really love her either.
I think Ken's going to love her just fine.
Okay. Well, Ken might. Ken might. That's a show. That's a showman's making in the process.
Right there.
Okay. Yeah. So really, ninth place for Rachel.
Yep. Yep. I mean, she seems very likable and she has like the thing that was a little bit surprising. She does have a little bit of substance. Like I like that her inspiration is Harriet Tubman as opposed to someone in her own family. Because now I can glean that Rachel values compassion and bravery and also has a strong sense of moral justice. But that makes me picture her pulling like a brand enhanced 1.0 and throwing her game away on some weird moral principle. So I don't know.
I don't think we have to worry about that.
No, you don't think so.
You'll be fine.
I also thought it was funny that she said that if she does release her sexy, it can be a bit much. Like, just how sexy is her sexy?
I dare not Google Angie.
No. Is it more sexy than Michelle? That's the question.
Wow.
Probably.
I don't know. We'll see.
Eighth place.
Are you moving on that quick? Okay.
I'm just moving on.
All right.
Keep it moving.
All right. Keep us out of trouble. All right.
Yeah.
Eighth place, Angie. Where are you going to go?
That's our Chelsea Handler.
Chelsea Handler. All right. What is a Chelsea Handler?
Chelsea Handler is a female between 20 and 35. She can be any profession under the sun. And how you know her is she's very witty. She's critical. She does not have to be gorgeous, although she can be. She's highly intelligent and very social. So usually the girl with the funniest bio is the Chelsea Handler.
All right.
And this one was a slam dunk. It can only be Hannah. Hannah Shapiro.
Hannah Shapiro, eighth place. All right. So talk to us about who is the best placing Chelsea Handler. Have we had a Chelsea Handler winner?
Sophie.
Or is it Courtney making it to the finals in China?
Sophie Clark was a Chelsea Handler.
Okay.
Aubrey went pretty far.
Okay.
And Aaron Lobdell also got pretty close to the money. So these are all Chelsea Handlers.
All right. So, What else about Hannah?
Oh, my God. I love her. I want to build her her own apartment in my house so I can keep her forever.
Okay. Well, what is she doing that's making you say that you want to keep her as a roommate or a pet?
A roommate. I think. Okay. A pet's a little bit too, you know. She's funny. She's really smart. She's a student of the game. She seems very quick on her feet. She seems very social. So, no, I just really like her. I need her to do well. Like, I need it. So,
is it going to happen?
I think it will. I think it will. I mean, like, in terms of the stuff from her bio, like, she's a writer barista. Is that like a firefighter game show host? Like, it seems like a really, really odd two things to put together.
Well, I don't think it's that uncommon. I mean, I think if you had like a actress waitress, I think it's the same sort of idea that there's not a lot of like, entry level writing jobs. I think you need to actually pay your rent while you're trying to become a writer.
I guess that's fair. Yeah. I guess of all the things, surrounding yourself by coffee is the way to go.
Yeah, it's like being a barista podcaster. I mean, I think it's
is that how you started?
No, that's my future, Angie.
Yeah.
That's on the way back down. That's where I'll be in a couple of years.
All the patrons have abandoned you.
Everybody, no! Yes. 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 That's the destiny of this whole thing. All right.
I like that she's following in the footsteps of Wiggler and Cochran by being the writer. And notice how I credit Wiggler with like player status now. I can't help it. Like,
yes.
Wiggler is life.
Yes. He's blazed a trail, him and Cochran, in terms of being writers. And now they've paved the way for Hannah to appear on Survivor now in 2016.
That's the move.
Yes.
So how can we not love her? She says she's an 80-year-old neurotic Jewish woman. So I'm hoping she can bond with anyone while she's out there, but also while also being like insecure about everything, because that would be hilarious.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
She says she took Max Dawson's class. So yeah. I'm not sure what the syllabus of his class is, but my advice is don't get naked, Hannah. It doesn't work.
Yeah.
I don't know. She seems extraordinarily likable to me. And I don't think she's going to have any problems making bonds. I think she's going to go really far. That's my take. Do you think she's a little bit too much of an odd duck?
I don't know. In terms of the dynamic of this millennial tribe, I don't know if she just might be too much to handle. And if she's not able to pull her weight enough in the tribe, like if in the early going, if they're not winning challenges, I don't know if they're going to really think that everything she's saying is like so hilarious that they need to keep her over if she's unable to perform in the challenges.
That is the danger with having a tribe that is separated by age, because that means if you're the weakest young person, you're the immediate target.
We'll see. It's really tough to figure out what the vibe is going to be in the millennial group, like what they're going to really value.
Yeah, I mean,
she likes to ski and scuba dive, so maybe she might have a physical element.
Yeah, she might not be that bad. And I think if there are enough people that know that are super fans that know the game very well, as they claim to, they're going to value loyalty and those social bonds over any sort of physical prowess. That's my feeling.
All right, Angie, seventh place.
That's our John McClane. Okay. So John McClane is the regular Joe, like blue collar job. He can be aggressive. He's intense. He's usually always pretty funny. He's social and he can be pretty athletic.
Yeah, I'm surprised that your John McClane is seventh place. I feel like that they typically do well in your rankings.
Well, again, this is the difference between placement ranking and a winner ranking. You know, and things have shifted around a lot. I mean, you know, every season is slightly different.
Okay.
So that's the way it started to trend, where John McClane started to fall a little bit.
Who do you got as your John McClane? Is it Brett?
It is Brett.
Yes, the threat.
Yeah, Brett the threat. So Brett's Boston accent is wicked awesome. Come on.
Yeah.
I love it. And I do notice his video is mostly about his feelings about other players. So this tells me that as a cop, he cannot stop reading people. Everything he does is focused outward. So this will serve him very well, I feel, as long as he doesn't play too hard too early.
But don't you feel like that the narrative of every single Boston person that's ever played this game is...
I work hard, I play hard.
Everybody here is underestimating me. Let me tell you about this guy. I mean, that aside from, Rodney, Boston, Rob, Betsy, Amy O'Hara, like they're all the same. They're all like, oh, let me tell you about this person that they think that they know, that they think that they're smart. No, I know what's going on. And he's the same exact thing.
He is. And I actually have like Betsy on my bullet points here, like, because Betsy's reaction to Russell
Jimmy
and
T,
Samoa,
put him in that category. That
No, what is really clear to these players right away, that someone can't be trusted, they cannot be too vocal about it. Because she knew her reaction to Russell was like immediately like, no, we can't trust this guy. But she made herself a target by telling people, hey, we can't trust this guy. So if Brett knows that if he can just play his cards close to his chest, he might do okay.
Yeah.
Because he seems a little bit more laid back than all those people you mentioned.
The New England Survivor contestants. Maybe there's somebody that I'm missing that is like totally the opposite of this. But and I think it's always good TV, so I'm not knocking it. But I think that it's just like there's a chip on the shoulder.
They really
of the
do
New England Survivor player.
They really do need to do a season just like that. New England versus the South versus California. That would be incredible.
Yeah, maybe some sort of like Northeast versus the, you know, we've talked about this idea of like sort of like East versus Central versus West. I think that that's a season that, you know, that's almost like white collar, blue collar, no collar. You could do that.
There's got to be a Southern tribe, though. I need like a tribe of Big Toms. I need that.
Well, I think Big Tom is technically from Virginia. But I think you definitely, you'd get that with the sort of like central. Yeah. Sort of people from the Midwest, people from the South. You know, I think that's sort of like a similar sort of like blue collar group. And then you have the East Coast is sort of like white collar. And then you have like the no collar, like granola California people.
I think that sounds awesome.
It's fine. It's as good as anything.
Yeah. Why not? They're running out of ideas.
Yeah. I mean,
and at this point, we'd watch anything, right?
We're talking about a season called Millennials versus Gen X.
I know. It's rough.
It's fine.
It's rough. I'm ashamed.
It's okay. All right.
It is what it is.
Anything else on Brett? I think he'll be very fun.
Yeah. I mean, he says he's most like Penner because he's funny and easygoing, but I think he lacks that intensity that some John McClanes have. You know, like you look at someone like Boston Rob, super intense, but he is a lot like Chris Doherty. So I think we're going to like Brett a lot.
Okay.
And I love that he does improv. I think that I think you've said before that players like funny people because it's super boring out on the island. Mm-hmm. And I think being able to put people at ease, help them pass the time, and knowing how to respond on the spot is a really good asset.
Okay.
So I think he's got a good chance.
All right.
Do you like his chances?
He's somebody that I think is going to be around for a while, but he's not somebody that I think has winner upside. Like I think that I think that he's sort of like has like top five like ceiling. I don't think that he's potentially going to be able to get to that final episode. Like I think that basically the best case scenario for him is like going out like in the Judd Sargent spot.
Yeah. No, I would agree with that.
Sorry, Brett. I don't think that he's going to be the winner, but I think it's going to be a fun ride for as long as we have him on the show. All right, Angie, sixth place.
This is our Heisenberg.
Heisenberg, always fun.
Yeah.
All right.
So this is our intense man, usually blue collar job, very aggressive, high energy, can be strong, not athletic.
I think I know where you're going with this.
Critical, cutthroat, willing to do anything. This is my second controversial call of the season.
Oh.
This is really, this is the big one.
Well, I was going to say you're going to go Zeke.
Nope.
Not Zeke.
I am making this season's Heisenberg Will.
Will Heisenberg.
Yeah.
Oh my God.
If you took everything Will said in his pregame and put it in the body of a middle-aged man, it would be a no-brainer.
Okay.
So I am making the call that Will is not only the youngest player to ever play this game, but he's the youngest Heisenberg to ever play.
Youngest and Heisenberg.
Keep in mind, at 29, fair play was no old guy either. So I do feel like there's enough of a precedent.
Yeah, but now.
I've just blown the roof off the joint. Yeah, it's crazy.
Okay.
So now Will seems very aggressive. He wants to emulate players like Randy Bailey, or at least he says he respects Randy's character.
Respects his character.
Yeah, he wants to manipulate people and screw with their heads. He wants to use his religion to bond with people, but then plans to lie and be the villain. I think he's got a lot of sense in that brain of his. I did notice he is saying this season what we discussed last season that Julia should have been saying, which is to mention that no one will think of him as a threat because he's so young, rather than trying to play up a non-existent life experience. So he thinks people are going to underestimate him and not even have him on the radar, which I would tend to agree with.
Angie, are you overcorrecting after you were sleeping so hard on Julia Sokolowski last season?
Maybe. I don't know. You know what? I also get extremely biased when I hear that they listen to the podcast.
Yes.
Because that immediately tells me, okay, this person really knows the game. Because you simply cannot listen to the podcast week after week after week if you're not super into strategy.
Okay.
So well, he's already.
Maybe he likes comedy, Angie.
Well, it is pretty funny. I'm sorry.
All right. So no, I just want to make sure I'm getting what you are. So certainly he says he's going to be cunning. He certainly says that he will use his religion potentially to get people to let their guards down. Is that enough to say that he's going to be the most scheming and maniacal player in a season?
Maybe. I was just impressed by his brain. Like I went into this thinking like, oh, I hate the 18-year-olds, and I'm reading up on him.
Such
and
a
I'm
Gen
just,
Xer.
I know it's terrible. I have age bias, is true. So, but also in the Gordon Holmes interview, he says, you know, cause all the interviewers are saying, what do you think the twist is going to be? And a lot of them were talking about the age split. Don't get me wrong, but he comes right out and says, I think it's going to be millennials versus Gen X.
Boom.
Like, boom, there it is. Nails it. So, I think really his only downfall will be what so many young people are guilty of, and that is arrogance. Like, I thought I knew everything when I was 18. Rob, I'm sure you thought you knew everything. It's like a facial tic. Young people go off into the world, then they realize there are lots of people who know things, and we're all relatively quite stupid, and then you learn to relax.
Mm-hmm.
So I think if he can play it a little dumb, he could go far, but I think he's very proud of himself for managing to get on Survivor, and I think he might, he's just got to keep a lid on it.
All right.
I don't
keep
know.
A lid on it. I'm rooting for him. I hope he is the Heisenberg.
I hope so too. Do not let me down, Will. I swear to God.
Yeah. Don't let us down. All right. Yeah. Will Wall.
Right.
Okay. Fifth place, Angie. Top five, baby.
Top five, baby. So fifth place is our Erin Brockovich. So this is your female age 30 to 45, and she's in a regular-ish job. So she tends to be quite social, athletic, smart, competitive. She flies beneath the radar because she's not, you know, she doesn't have one of these big gregarious personalities. She's not a control freak. So she's not the doctor or the lawyer.
Yeah.
So the Erin Brockovich is kind of the girl version of the John McClane. And this season, Cece is our Erin Brockovich.
All right. Cece is the Erin Brockovich. All right.
She's our 39-year-old insurance adjuster.
Okay.
So she says she knows how to negotiate from her job. She knows how to work hard for what she wants. I believe both these traits will serve her well. The line about multiple personalities has me a little worried, but hopefully she can keep that under
look,
control.
After we had Sydney last season, just throw that out the window because we don't know anything. It might not even come up. It might not even be a thing. So
don't check me, boo.
Yeah.
Yeah. Were you feeling let down that Sydney didn't like completely radically change personalities?
No, because she was so great that it's just like my expectations were one thing and she was totally something else. But she was something that was so wonderful
so good.
That I'll never complain about it.
I loved Sydney.
Yes.
I was rooting for her so hard. It hurt.
Yes.
Okay.
As I was going back and thinking of like people that I want to have on the podcast this season, I was just thinking about like, oh, that'd be so great if Sydney would do a recap. Like she was so fantastic. Even the interview I did with her after the season was wonderful. She's the best. She might be my favorite Survivor now.
Whoa.
Yeah. I promoted her.
Over Steven? Ouch.
Wow. That went way over Steven. Are you kidding?
Yeah. So Cece says she's been watching the game since the beginning and she's been trying to get on for 15 years. I just found her a little bit bland. But maybe that means she'll fly under the radar all the way to the end.
When Nicole and I had a hard time really sort of trying to get a sense of what her game was going to be about from the bio and from the interview, I felt like that she wasn't really being super specific about anything she's going to do in the game.
Yeah. And I don't know why, but I have a feeling she's the one who's going to like make her whole tribe pray as soon as they hit the beach.
Yeah. Why did she strike you as being very religious?
Yeah. She wants to bring a Bible and she's in the religious vibe.
Mm.
Sure.
Okay. So you have her in your system's top five. Do you feel like that the system is reaching on her or do you feel like that you can see it?
It feels like a reach to me.
Yeah.
But I feel like I haven't seen enough of her to know.
Yeah, I just have no idea. I don't have a good scouting report on CC at this point.
Me neither. I don't know. I don't know. All right. And our fourth place is our tough old broad.
Tough old broad. All right. I think I know where you're going to go with this one, but go on.
Again, this is a bit of a slam dunk. This has got to be Lucy.
Okay. Yes. All right. So the tough old broad, for the people who are listening to this for the first time, explain what you're looking for there.
The tough old broad is the super driven, highly athletic older lady. So they either do extremely well making like amazing goats like Monica and Sherry, or winning the whole damn thing like Tina and Denise. Mm-hmm. So they tend to be very loyal and also very good in challenges. They're very great and they're good alliance members. They've got a maternal side to them, so they're good at holding alliances together. And Lucy scares me a little bit. Like, she's not fooling around. She looks like a hired assassin. Mm-hmm. So, like, you know, Quentin Tarantino is watching Survivor this season and making phone calls to secure this chick. But she also seems like very, very capable. She's physically strong. The female bodybuilder like Sydney, she could do really, really well in challenges. She's a mom of four children. Mm-hmm. I know the young listeners out there are probably tired of hearing people talk about how parenting is like the same thing as being an Olympic athlete, but it really, really is a big deal. Mm-hmm. Like having a little baby that's like standing at a factory job all day long for 14 hours with no breaks. Then at night, you're like the med student on call in the on-call room, getting woken up for some emergency every 2 hours. And this just as it starts to get better, you squeeze out another baby and it's back to the same routine. Like, seriously. And it goes on for years and years.
Andrew,
and
you
years
projecting
years.
Onto Lucy?
A little bit. Like, yeah. I don't even remember sleeping in. Like, my body can't even physically do it anymore. Because after a while, you just, like, it's a thing. It's a real thing. It's hard, and it seasons you. And believe me, it prepares you for Survivor, for sure.
Yeah. I do think that the tough old broad character type is one that, because there's two types of mom. So there's the tough old broad, and then there's sort of, like, the soft, sensitive mom. And I don't necessarily mean soft, like physically, like Dawn Meehan was somebody who was actually like quite physical and really good in the challenges and stuff like that. But somebody who is not like really emotionally tough. And I think that that is where you can combine the like ability to face adversity plus the ability to really hold your own in the challenges. I feel like that's a pretty powerful thing in the game.
It's true. It's true. And the other character type, the mommy dearest and the tough old broad, really do have the most in common. And sometimes it can be very difficult to decide what side or the other it's going to be in, mm-hmm. you know, but I find that the tough old broad tends to be, as you were saying, a little bit less emotional, like a Don Meehan, and extremely good in challenges. Like, usually the one where you're like holding the rope and leaning back, it's the tough old broad who wins like every single season. It's uncanny. It's uncanny.
All right.
So, given that she's a mom of four and a bodybuilder, I have like mad respect. And it's the fact that she says she's controlling that worries me. Like, she says she's going to play like Jeremy, but is that just an indicator that she's only watched the newer seasons? I don't know.
It's a good point.
Know.
It's a good point.
Yeah. I don't know if she's loyal enough to go really deep in the game or not. I mean, we'll have to wait and see.
So you don't have her as high as the system does.
It depends how well she knows the game. You know, I feel like that. I wish the recruits or the people that don't know the game that well, that just got picked up in a fitness club or something, I wish they would just tell us, you know, because there are pros and cons to either way. But when they try and fake it and say, oh, no, I've been watching this my whole life. It's like,
yeah, I feel like we tend to know on Big Brother. I feel like they're like, yeah, I was just like at a bar like 2 weeks ago. And then somebody asked me about one of the show and here I am. Like, I feel like we don't get that as much on Survivor.
No, there's a pride issue with it for some reason.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I think that Lynn might just say, don't tell them, but we just found you a week ago. And then that's how you're here.
Yeah. Because the people that have been flying for 15 years will like get really, really mad and they'll boycott. So
yeah. Yeah. And then if you're bad, then people will really hate you.
Yeah. And they'll say, see,
that should have been me. Okay. But Lucy, like, I wouldn't be shocked if she's good, but she's somebody that I don't really get a good sense of how she's going to play as well.
Yeah, she seems a bit angry. I think she might blow up at someone.
It's possible. It's possible.
Yeah. Yeah.
All right. Let's talk about the top three.
Top three.
Okay.
Okay. So in third place, we've got our surfer dude.
Okay. All right.
So this is the long-haired, easygoing, very athletic, new agey, social, flaky guy. He's the dude bro kind of player. So he's usually pretty easy to pin down. So it doesn't get more surfer dude than Taylor Lee Stalker.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
He's totally a snowboard instructor, dude.
Yep.
But his name sounds like a race car driver.
Taylor Lee Stalker is.
Is that an insult to Vanilla, though? I don't know.
Oh, leave Julia Landauer out of this.
All righty.
Okay.
As for his generation's epicness, Gen X BBSers invented LOL, for the record.
Yes.
I mean, he can have it if he wants, because inventing Google is much cooler. But let's be clear here.
Yes.
He says he's so likable, no one will vote him off, which tells me he hasn't studied the game enough to know what a social threat is, or he wouldn't even say that.
Mm-hmm.
He wants to try fishing in Alaska, so he has a death wish. I don't know if that's an asset or a liability in the game.
The thing about him and his bio, like, hard to tell if anything is said sort of like tongue in cheek, where maybe like if you were sort of like reading like a transcript of something Tyson might say, you might, you know, interpret it differently than if you heard him say on like on News AF talking about it. So maybe we need to give Taylor the benefit of the doubt here. Is that possible?
Maybe, but I think you can tell from the video. Like,
I don't think he's being ironic, for the record, but it's possible. Maybe he is.
As soon as you see Tyson in real life, you can tell that everything he is saying is a parody of itself. Whereas this guy is like, I'm honestly not thinking about the money, bro.
I believe that.
Yeah. So then he'll have no trouble going home sixth.
Yeah.
That'll be great.
So, Angie, third place for this guy. Come on.
This is the thing that's crazy. Like, considering how much he reminds everybody of Fabio, wouldn't it be crazy if the only two age-based seasons were won by, like, these two guys? Like, I don't see it happening, but...
Do you think he has Fabio upside?
I think he does. But honestly, the second he says Siki Siki Nar Nar around a bunch of Gen Xers, they will cut his throat.
Like, literally, not even, like, in the game. Yeah.
They will cut him.
Yeah.
I don't like his chances.
All right. The surfer dude. That's Taylor Lee Stalker. I mean, Survivor does have like a long history of surfer dudes who have performed well. You mentioned Fabio. Tyson in your system is a surfer dude. You have Wu as a finalist who brings the average up. I believe Aris you also have as a surfer dude.
And so, Ethan.
And Ethan. Yeah, I think that Ethan. I think that one might be like... maybe we have to reclassify that one. The surfer dude is getting too inflated.
The early seasons, there's a lot of crossover players. There's a lot that could be in multiple categories because they're still kind of eking out who's best cast on this game. Like the Seduce and Destroy goes through a radical evolution. So it's very difficult.
Okay.
It's difficult to go back and try and, be an armchair what do they call that? A Monday night quarterback?
Monday morning quarterback.
Whatever.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's very easy to look back and say that doesn't fit, but you'd have to be creating new character types, which blows the whole premise.
Okay. So I've been following the board the whole way through. We've got two people that are left out there. One, I think, is a pretty good sleeper that I think that people are feeling very good about this season. In Zeke, who's been very funny. And then you have Sunday, who I don't know if anybody is too high on. Your system is predicting them as either the first and second place winners or the first and second place finishers in this season. So you want to give us number one or number two?
Let's go with number two, first of all.
All right. Who is number two? Who does number two work for?
In my final controversial call of the season, season 33's know-it-all is Zeke.
Okay, wow.
So the know-it-alls are seriously climbing up the system lately.
Maybe burying the lead of your of the system's projected first place finisher. Might be time to go back and adjust the algorithm. All right, let's talk Zeke because number two know-it-all. I think that's not crazy talk.
It's not crazy talk. Know-it-alls are bringing sexy back.
Rob, yes,
basically.
Yes.
Spencer making it to the finals and the fact that they don't get cast quite as often as the other character types really makes these guys strong competitors.
Mm-hmm.
So the definition of the know-it-all is that he's a highly intelligent super fan who's highly analytical.
Super duper fan or super just super fan?
Well, I think he's more of a super fan than Adam. So I would say maybe the hardcore super fan would be the classification I would give Zeke.
Okay.
He's highly analytical, understands strategy, is often well-educated, is funny with strong social skills. So again, I'm a bit biased because Zach listens to RHAP, including the evolution of strategy. That is hardcore.
Mm-hmm.
Plus, he was recruited to Harvard because of his debating skills, and now he works in finance. So that tells me that he's highly intelligent, and he's hilarious and easy to be around. So he's so much more like Cochran than he is like Bryce. I had to make him the know-it-all.
Okay, so Zeke looks very fun. How do you think he's going to get along with the other millennials? Because he's sort of like the self-loathing millennial.
I think he's going to get along great with everybody. Honestly, I'm really high on Zeke. I think he's going to play a very strong social game.
Yeah.
I think he's an intense young thinker who will not necessarily be on everyone's radar because he's the funny guy. And I don't know. I think he's able to click with these other millennials. I like the fact that he does improv as well. There's two players on this season with that skill. That's got to be, I think that's got to be great preparation for Survivor.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Boy, it's going to be like a real, upright citizens brigade out there.
It sure will. So much potential this year for confessional gold, I think, too. And I think Zeke's going to really deliver on that level.
Okay.
So.
All right. Let's talk about this controversial, crazy number one pick the system is predicting. Sunday Berkest. I'm very proud of my one of my fantasy football teams of any given Sunday Berkest for this season. One of my better fantasy football names that I've had in the last couple of years. All right. Talk nice. To me about your projected winner for season 33.
The mommy dearest is the best player in Survivor in terms of getting the farthest in the game. That's just the way it is. And it's that way because Sandra won twice. Sari almost won twice, and players like Dawn, Mama C, and Lisa Welchel keep getting to the finals.
Okay.
So to put this into perspective for the listeners, Meredith Grey has played 27 times and made it to the finals twice. Mommy Dearest has played just 15 times and made it to Final Tribal 7 times. So with that said, it pains me to say that the player most likely to make it to Final Tribal Council is Sunday Berkwist.
Yeah. And in those mommy dearest, there is a lot of variance in that they can be out very early and they also can make it to the finals. And even though Sandra has won twice, there's a decent shot they could also be a zero vote losing finalist. So the system predicts that the probability they get to the end and their average finish, but not necessarily their win rate.
That is correct.
Okay.
They very rarely go out early. Like Taj, let me go through the list. It's Carolyn, Lisa Welchel, Dawn Meehan, Taj, Susie Smith, Sari, and Sandra. Those are like your typical, like that's a very strong field for strong finishers, right? Yeah, but I mean, it pains me because I'm just not that fond of her. Mm. Given that she's my exact age, I think she should be far more interesting.
Yeah, far more interesting.
Yeah. I mean, she wants to play like Lisa, so one can only assume she tends to cry a lot and go to the end and lose. She says she's bossy and tenacious, but also compassionate. I don't know. We'll have to see if she can build trust with the other players out there. All of her pet peeves are people that piss her off and sound a lot like her high school bullies, like arrogant people, people who think they're God's gift to the human race, catty women who make other girls feel like they don't measure up, and late people, because fuck those guys. She's going to meet all of these types of women and they're all going to make her cry on day two because she'll feel excluded just like Dawn and Lisa did. It's going to be like, ugh, can't wait.
Yeah.
Can't wait to watch that again. But she may actually make it to Final Tribal. The mommy dearest always does. She always does. But I don't have to like it. So the upside is she sounds very Fargo, which is always kind of a hoot to listen to.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Sunday could be TV gold. It could be a possibility, but I don't see her performing well in the game, Angie.
Really?
Yeah, character type be damned. I don't think she's going to go far. Does that make the system's pick of Sunday Berkest your official Angie Kontz pick?
Hell no.
Okay, all right. Do you want to share with us your actual pick?
Yes.
Who is
it? So generally what happens? So for the winner picks, the winner ranking, let me just tell you in order, according to the system, who's most likely to win. In fifth place, we have Zeke.
Okay.
Fourth is Taylor. Third is Will. Second is Sunday. And number one is supposed to be Cece.
Okay.
So generally what I do is I look at those top five And then I pick from them who I think has the greatest chance based on what I've seen in their bio and in their experience, their knowledge of the game, et cetera. So my winner pick for this season is Zeke.
Zeke. Okay.
It's Zeke.
That would be fun.
I think he's a very strong player, in my opinion. He may not be athletic enough, but he's enough of a student of the game to have gone out and whipped his body into shape over the last 6 months. This dude has lost 30 pounds. He knows what's up. So I don't think anyone's going to see him coming. And I don't think anyone's worried about him.
Because he's so svelte.
Yeah.
Can't see him anymore.
Yeah, that's true. He's all but disappeared. Wow. Will was a close contender. And if Will had 10 more years under his belt, I would go with him. But I think that arrogance is going to get him. And it's not lack of experience and it's not like lack of game knowledge. I think he's going to think he's got something sewed up and he's going to get blindsided.
Look,
that's what I think.
For Will, then the move is then just get an invitation back. Second time out.
That's the way to go for sure.
That was the Sokolowski plan.
Oh, it works.
Yeah, good. It works. Look, you don't have to win your first time.
No. God, no. Just be amazing. Just be interesting. Just
all seriousness, I mean, that is the Cochran plan. You know, it's like, just go out there, make a good impression, get back, and then see what happens.
And then win.
Yeah. Everything the first time out is just preparation for your second time.
That's not a bad way of looking at it. It takes the pressure off.
Yeah, have
fun. It takes the pressure off, too.
Well, yeah, who cares?
Who cares?
Whatever.
All right. Do you want to hear about Gotenchel very quickly?
Yes.
Okay, so according to the system, the best goats for the season are going to be Lucy, Michelle, or Paul.
Okay, so why? Why?
Because traditionally, these are the character types that end up in the final five the most often without winning.
Mm-hmm.
So Lucy could be tricky because two tough old broads have won in the past, but they make very good come in second kind of people to take with you. Same with the Little Red Riding Hood is often a good goat. As long as you're not a jerk. If you're a jerk, then the Ambers end up winning. Similarly, the Specialist has sat in the final tribal council many, many times and lost. So also the Heisenberg can make a goat. If they're a complete jerk and the cranky Heisenberg has been the goat three times. Mm-hmm. Of course, two of them was Russell. But also Sunday could be an amazing goat. I suspect that she'll make it to the end because someone will be like, nah, no one will ever. There's no way she's getting the million.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. All right.
What do you think of those contenders? Sounds good?
I mean, sounds plausible. I definitely see Sunday. I think that she has the go-tential.
For sure. Yeah. I would agree with that.
Yeah, I can't see the scenario where she has winner potential.
I cannot see her winning. I honestly can't see her winning. Like, some people have to, like, there would have to be some serious, you know, douchebaggery going on for...
I don't know.
Seriously.
No? Yeah. I don't see how it's going to happen, but who knows? That's why we watch the show, Angie.
To see all the upsets?
Yes.
See everybody be proven wrong?
Yeah. I mean, it's no fun to, you know, exactly. Okay. This is exactly how it's going to turn out. And then boom. And then so it is.
I find it extremely fun when I'm able to do that.
Yeah.
It's very rare that it happens.
There's nothing that's more fun than being wrong about this show. And God knows that I'm having the most fun then, if that's the case.
Of anybody who ever was.
Yes. Yeah. Yes. Nobody has been wrong more times about this show ever. And I think that you could look that up. I think that's honest to God fact. Nobody has ever been more wrong more times about Survivor than I have.
I notice you always pick the same types of people, though. Like just looking
at
the cast.
How so, Angie? How so?
Because I can usually tell which, like, okay, I can usually narrow it down to about three people. And I think those are going to be Rob's winner picks right there.
You knew I was picking Chris?
You like that kind of blue collar type. You really,
yes,
really do.
I
like,
do.
Anna was the one that was most off book for you, I found.
Yeah. Well, I can relate to that Gen X work ethic.
Yep.
Just
you can.
Get up early in the morning. Get in the studio, podcast about a bunch of TV that you watch. That's, you know, how I was raised. All right, Angie. So, all right, we've talked about the system. What's next for future seasons? Is there anything that you've taken away from this process for going forward from this?
Well, what's got me thinking this season? I think it was Antonio who was saying that casting of CBS is breaking my system by choosing more well-rounded characters to play Survivor.
Oh.
And I think he's right. And I think it's time to move the system to the next level.
How so?
Well, to do this, I am going to need the listeners' help.
Okay. Oh, a project.
Yes, it's going to be an epic project. So I need lots of help. What I want is for RHAP volunteers to rewatch seasons with me and track individual player behavior on a chart.
Yes. All right.
Yes. So I would like as many volunteers as possible, because this is a very subjective task and I want to use a majority rules crowdsourcing premise rather than just what I think of a player's behavior. And I'm hoping that this, the results of this will accomplish two goals. One, create a more nuanced portrait of each character type. And two, make it possible to tweak probabilities as the season progresses. Because you're always saying, well, what about after a couple of episodes in? How do you like everybody's chances? I'm hoping that getting a fuller picture of player behavior will help us do this.
All right, Angie, if people are up for embarking on that mission with you, what should they do?
They should tweet at me.
Okay.
And then we'll get it going. I have a really solid BI team now. So I'm really excited about
BI team.
Yeah, business intelligence for data manipulation moving forward. So I've got Sean Falconer, Tovey Paul, Justin Mills, and Will Seaman have all come forward and expressed interest in creating data models based on the system. And these guys are so good at shifting stuff around and crunching numbers. So we have plans to make all kinds of more accessible stuff to everybody. So we're going to be putting up a Google Sheet with the character types in a chart just to start. Sean Falconer has also set up constypes.com, which is an amazing interface.
Yeah, this is hold on a second. This is just like a
total blindside.
What is this website? You guys don't have a podcast, do you?
No, we don't.
Okay. That's coming.
This guy is he's like superhuman with his productivity. He's like,
what's the website called?
It's just www.constypes.com. So it's a database of all the players to ever play and what their character types are. And it's amazing. So what we're hoping to be able to do is make the data more accessible to everybody, because everyone's always saying, do you have an updated version of your spreadsheet? You know, what if you looked at it this way instead of this way? So we're really trying to make it more of a user generated system, make it more accessible.
I'm like floored. Yeah.
I was also, like, oh,
really?
It's amazing, right?
Wow. But this is like a lot of work went into this.
People love it. People love it.
Wow.
Well, plus they have a...
You want to join the mission.
What I love about it is these people tend to have very good ideas about what's hurting the system, what's helping. So, you know, often it's these guys that'll say, you know, Perez Hilton's got to go. And they make very, very good analytical arguments.
All right.
And then I bend.
That's I'm really blown away right now.
I was too. I was just sitting at work and then he just like fires me a message to say, by the way, I created this website, like as one does.
Yeah. Wow. Crazy. It's crazy. All right. Well, if you want to be part of the team of working on perfecting the cast type system, tweet to you at Angie Kant on Twitter. How about the hashtag super duper Fangie?
I love it.
Okay, you like that?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
It's about me.
Yes, make it about you. If you want to become a super duper Fangie and help Angie perfect the system heading into Survivor season 34 and whatever it might be about, then you can help with the process of that. If you're going to be changing things for season 34, that's the time to do it, right?
I think so. I think it's going to be particularly useful going to 34, because these are all players we've seen before.
Yes. Yes. Okay. And maybe that they've changed since their first game.
Yeah.
Perhaps. Okay. All right, Angie. So much fun to talk this through with you all the time. I'm sure we'll get a lot of feedback on robhasawebsite.com. So much more to go here in the preseason, because we are going to probably, I think the next Survivor podcast you're going to hear from us, Corinne's going to come through with the binder and we're going to get another look at this season before we kick things off on our Wednesday night premiere of September 21st of Survivor Millennials versus Gen X.
All right, parents, hide your kids. Corinne's coming.
Yeah, hide your kids, hide your rice. That's going to be very exciting. Also, just one other note, and I said this on the Big Brother podcast the other night, but I know there's a lot of Survivor fans who are not down with the Big Brother. So on Big Brother finale night, which is also the same night as the Survivor premiere, I'm going to have the opportunity to go and cover the Big Brother finale live on the CBS lot and do interviews with the Big Brother cast at the Big Brother house. So I am not going to be around for the know-it-alls for the premiere of Millennials versus Gen X. We're going to have a show live. Stephen Fishback and Josh Wigler will be covering it on the know-it-alls for premiere night. And then we will do our regular Survivor coverage coming up on Thursday. So everything will be just back to normal and I have to go and do the Big Brother. So I do apologize for my absence from the festivities on opening night for season 33.
It's worth it. And Rob, I got to ask you, are you down with OTT?
I certainly am. You know how I am, Angie. Yes.
Yeah. You know me. I'm down too.
Yes. All right. So very excited. Are you going to watch the OTT or is that a Canada issue? Is going to be problematic?
We have our ways.
Okay. All right. Good. Your ways to be able to be down with OTT as well. So lots of fun stuff coming up. If you want to find out more about all of the fun things that we're doing, one of the best ways to support the podcast is to become a patron. Go to robhasawebsite.com/patron for more information on all of the benefits of supporting RHAP. Until next time, talk to you again soon. Take care, everybody. Bye.